Yes, today we're joined by Glenn's Vodka Championship manager of the month for March, Derek McInnes.
By the way, how stunning is he?
I'm just going to say, not just manager of the month, but also the most handsome manager of the year we've gave you on Open Goal.
No award for that, but is
there? He's going to get you an award after that. When the cameras get turned off, you get your award for him.
Maybe Mal come up and bring it up to you.
But we need to know, how do you keep him such good nick?
Oh, it's a constant battle, isn't it? I think, the one thing I really do miss about playing is being fit. You know, having that discipline and, you know, constantly having to kind of make sure you were right to perform. You know, I think I miss that. And when I think about when I stopped playing, there was no real decision. It just became a player manager and effectively just stopped picking myself. And when I look back now, although I had knee injuries and all the rest of it, I miss being fit because I needed to be fit to get by and play. And
You were a baller, though, now. You popped the ball
I could play, but, you know, obviously, fitness was a big part. I always felt the guy I was up against wouldn't have worked harder than me Monday to Friday.
And
I loved going onto a pitch on a Saturday knowing that no matter how good he was, whether we're playing Rangers, Celtic, playing down the road, whoever against you're playing, I knew I'd worked harder than him. So that was important to me. But now it's a constant battle, just try to eat less and do a wee bit when you can. Like you walk with the dogs and stuff like that and go out and a bite occasionally But nothing really, because my knees are not good, to be honest. My knees are rotten.
Downside is management. Never ever try to sign us, mate.
That's a good thing.
That's why he is the manager he is.
I just never ever thought we could have afforded you.
No, I don't.
that's a few managers that have said that. Yeah. That was Alexander that said that as well. But see, Del, see, just don't say, obviously, yes, there's a big announcement. Going to be your first job. Yeah. You any advice for him on that?
I take it, you're going to stop playing?
I don't know.
See, I think you should, to be honest. No, no, because you'll probably be your best player at your club. I don't know who you're going to be signing and what squad you're putting together, but I just don't think you can do it. I look back at player managers, successful player managers, Kendall Gleish.
I'm putting myself as a Dalglish.
Kendall Gleish had all that boot room support, you know, all that Anfield support. Graham Souness had Walter and the like. But there's very few that can do both, I think. Mm-hmm. Your head's like a toy shop on the pitch, and you're constantly trying to improve others, and that's your job. Your manager, as a manager, is to set your team up to win a game and improve boys. And if you're constantly still trying to deal with your own side, I think it's too much.
Yeah.
You might get away with it for a while, and you might want to set the tempo.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe at the start, going and do it.
Maybe, but I don't think it's sustainable, to be honest. Yeah. So, while you're starting, it's exciting for you, and it's obviously something you want to get into, but. I would say it's probably the first kind of step towards stopping playing, to be honest.
I got on my point up at Pittodrie as well. Do you remember it? We were beating you 3-1 at Dundee.
Oh, you just played against
mate, it was about 4 minutes to go. Hartley was like, right, going. I was going to a terrible time at Dundee, mate. Couldn't have passed the ball to a blue jersey.
You didn't know.
4 minutes to go. No, he was a manager. 4 minutes to go. Put me on 3-1. Shankland it was.
Shankland, two, was it two goals?
3-2, mate. I'm like, oh, no. Mate, I've not even touched the ball. 3-3, and it's the fucking Alamo, mate. I don't know how you
get your man in the match with Spencer. I don't remember.
I remember the goal.
I remember the finish. But I didn't think
I remember you cheering when I was getting warming up. Boys, you've got a fucking chance. He's coming on.
No, not at all.
Right, Kelly, you're up, mate.
Unbelievable.
See, when you first went in there, Dale, did you think I can get this group of players up?
Well, I did. I'd went in the. I remember when Tommy lost his job, it came up the ticker tape, and I was sitting at home. My wife and I had just got a Chinese in, and we were just, and I hadn't genuinely thought, I was a bit surprised at it, and it wasn't even a thinking of, oh, maybe if I go at that job or whatever. We'd booked to go on holiday, we're thinking about going in January. So I was a bit shocked when I seen he'd lost his job. So when it came round and Kelly, I was due to have the conversation with Kilmarnock, I went and watched a bro with Inverness. And I took the game in and looked at both teams, could see the qualities of both teams, all the rest of it. And obviously Kilmarnock were, I think, third or fourth at the time. And then I looked at the squad a wee bit more in depth and I thought there was good players there. There must be a reason why they struggled. Their home form was really poor, considering they were up there. And nobody's won a title or won anything without being strong at home. So I knew we could maybe address that. But once I spoke to the board, there were loads of good people there, and I felt like it felt all of a sudden more right than no. So, and then once we were in that first day with the boys and just try to drag a wee bit more confidence out of them and personality, I think there was a lot of frustration, part of a relegated team, a lot of the fans, maybe no trust in the team at home and things weren't going right. It wasn't perfect for the players and maybe some were getting to their shell, but there was a reason why they weren't performing the way they could have. So we had to address that. And I think the biggest thing for me was the home form. You know, I think we won 9 out of 10 league games that. And that was a catalyst really to winning the league. So what a bunch of boys. I mean, I've been involved loads of
good lads,
ah, magic. They're up there. Honestly, it's been for myself and Dot and Peanut, we love going in. Honestly, bounce into work in the morning. They're an absolute pleasure. And it helps when you're winning most weeks. Obviously, you're part of a winning dressing room. But, you know, we never tried to take that pressure away from them. The pressure was there. There's no point in trying to underplay it. But just try to deal with it by being good Monday to Friday, get loads of spirit, loads of enthusiasm, loads of togetherness, set them up right and, you know, putting demands on them. But, no, they're the ones that have got the job done and they deserve so much credit because everybody's saying, I've commanded on the wrist, I know that. And I heard what everybody was saying. There's 3 or 4 better teams in the league. A championship manager actually phoned me up 3 days after getting the job. Ex-championship manager, he's managed most of his career in there. And he says, well, I think there's about 3 teams better than Kilmarnock. He says, but all the best. And we had a chat about it. And he says, I just don't know what they are. They've not got size at centre forward. They've not got enough pace. They don't pass the ball well enough. They've not got enough passes in the team. And he rounded off 3 teams who he thought were better. So. It was just an honest opinion. You know what I mean? And to be fair, I respected his opinion. But, you know, I set about the task, tried to get a few additions in, brought Big Ash up, brought Kyle in. I thought we needed more personality, more size in the team. And Big Kyle, I thought at this level would score goals, and obviously he did do that. So we quickly got a bit of confidence into the team. You could see them improving, put a wee bit more demand on them, but they've been absolutely brilliant. And every dressing room you're involved in when you're successful, you look back with real fondness. I'm still close with a lot of my St Johnstone players and a lot of my Aberdeen players, and still message. And it'll be the same with these boys in years to come. You know, we became really close really quickly. And I think I hear these managers saying, oh, you've got to get a distance with your players. I couldn't think of anything worse. You know, I think we're judged on the performance of others, the managers.
Yeah.
You're judged on who you sign now and who you... So it's your job to try and
get
the best out of them. And doing that is by... It's like beating a parent. You know, you come down on them when they need to come down on them, but you give them a cuddle and encouragement at the right time as well.
Everybody, the whole Scottish football almost wanted... It seemed like everybody wanted the Fairy to win the league and go up. Was that hard for you, though, to... Because they just didn't go away, didn't they?
Or did you use that every moment just to get...
Not really. I think we were just kind of hell-bent on sorting out ourselves, sorting out our own business. We didn't want to depend on anybody. And we've seen the love in for a broth and, you know, I got that. You know, it is a good story. You look at it a wee bit deeper, you know, that team's been built over 3 years. I was trying to put a squad together over 3 months, really. So they had the benefit of having all that. They're well-paid part-time players. The majority of them could be full-time if they wanted to, but they choose not to be. And, you know, there's so much good about Arbroath. And you can see that story developing and how everybody wanted it. But, you know, for us, it was just all about... I was there. My responsibility was to get Kilmarnock. I knew who I was representing. I knew who was depending on me and who was depending on us. And that superseded everything. And we never really let that come into it. We never really mentioned other teams, to be honest. We just try to...
So see when managers say like, didn't even look at the results, that's a lie, isn't it? Of course it is.
Aye, and you see that. And
were you expecting them to fall sooner, Dale?
No, I thought, do you know what, Arbroath would win their home games.
Yeah.
Their away form was still pretty impressive, but they weren't winning as many in the road, but they weren't losing. And we just, I had done the maths, I felt when we went in we needed to have 10 wins. I thought 6 to 8 points would win the league. And I was privately said that, and the staff. So we were working towards 6 to 8 points and 10 wins, and my 10th win was home to Arbroath. So, and normally in any walk of life, you're going to have to beat your closest challengers to be successful, and Arbroath were our, because we beat Partey at home, we beat Inverness at home, we beat Raith. So slowly but surely we started to get away from them. But ultimately, if you don't beat your closest challengers, you normally don't win. So it was all in that game, to be honest, you know. So, and we didn't deal with the first half, but second half, you know, a true reflection of what I expected is turned up and got the job done. It was a proper finish, and you know, you couldn't have scripted it any better for Kilmarnock.
It's a great game, man.
So. Some night, that even the atmosphere was amazing, right? The stadium was full, but
I still think Arbroath have got a chance of going up.
Yeah, so
do you?
Because they're both on, like you say,
they don't lose many goals. They're same, that familiarity at the back. You know, McKenna's a good player, Jack Hamilton can get goals. They're well set up, so you wouldn't back against them to have that playoff shot.
Mm-hmm.
Are they tough to play against?
It's tougher up there, and that's why I was annoyed with our first half performance, because we'd spoke all week about trying to play a certain way, try to stretch the game, try to play on the outsides of them and ask the question of them, try to bypass really a lot of the time their two banks of four and really make them move. And we didn't really do it. We got caught up in the emotion of the game, I thought, first half, and then we lose a goal which sets everybody back, you know what I mean? Mm. But second half, I actually thought, right for the outset, we battered them second half. We did. We dominated the ball. We kept asking the question. And I felt if we scored the first goal early enough, we would win the game. And that's how it played out. But no, they've got so much good going for them. I respected the league. There's a lot of teams in the league who I've got a high regard for, you know, managers and the players. And we didn't pretend we were wholly better than anybody else. We had work to do. We had to convince every day. But more importantly, we had to convince the players that we're good enough.
Uh-huh. How's Dick on the side? Hard work.
Do you know, I don't know. I mean, you watch him when you watch games and he can be a bit animated, but you know, first half he always watches up
in the stand, didn't he?
And to be honest, second half, I don't really notice too much at the dugouts.
Because it was the players after the game, somebody said that you were the calmest guy in the dressing room at half
time. I was going to ask at his team talk all the time.
Well, there was bedlam and there was obviously panic because it's like, we've got 45 minutes to, it becomes a 45 minute game now. Mm-hmm. You know, everything we'd worked on all week and we were flying into it. Training was great, you know, but sometimes you'll get this as a man, training's never always an indication. It can give you an indication of it, but we had such a good week of prep, we got Rory McKenzie back, we wanted to make sure we get in the team. So I felt we were right, everything was right for the game, but we hadn't played. So second half, it's just a wee reminder of the players at half time that, you know, to get back to what we were spoke about. And sometimes, you know, the emotion, the bedlam that goes on, probably the enormity of, we're making an ass of this, we're not going to win this, and that'll kill us, and you know, the fallout for all that. And once you, half time came at the right time for us, because I needed to be able to say that to them and just say, look, just start passing the ball. In training, you stick it to each other, guys up your arse, you just still take responsibility. And right for the outset, you like to see a McGinn and your Olsen and McKenzie's, we started to play and we got our goals, thankfully.
That's an achievement, mate, that. Uh-huh. Brilliant.
How was the night? What did you do after it?
We were pretty quiet. My wife and my oldest boy were down.
Is Jack your oldest now?
Jack, yeah. Uh-huh. So Jack was down. He was busting to get involved and have a drink, but he had to drive my car home. So with a few beers, the players were lively and I think they went on into Kilmarnock. But Dot and Peanut, they drove up the road back to Broughty Ferry. I was quiet, really. Went up to the boardroom with a couple of beers afterwards when we were out of the dressing room. And then we'd already set in place. Players never knew, but we were all meeting Sunday. So we're having brunch, breakfast, liquid breakfast at the club. Can't be a liquid breakfast, can you?
That's the one you need to do that as a manager. So every Sunday we'd do it.
So we...
Friday as well.
So we set up 11 o'clock, rugby park, in one of the suites, all the boys together, and then we're in a beer garden, Kilmarnock. So, and then up the town. So it was good to celebrate every day together, do you know what I mean? So,
sensational.
And then the boys, they're away in Spain now. I was throwing all sorts of them. We'll get you a holiday, we'll get you a bonus. Just won the league.
Yeah. Wee Burke's t-shirt in the pool, ain't he? Wee Ginger, ain't he? Wee Burke,
he's not away.
He's too sensible.
He's,
for
he's coaching the 18, he's helping the 18s at the minute. So,
good.
He's not away. No,
it's nice. Ask you about Lafferty, mate. I've interviewed him, met him a couple of times. Funny, funny boy. What is a conversation like with Kyle Lafferty when you're trying to convince him to sign for a football club?
Do you know what? It's you hear all the stories about Kyle. I'd actually tried to take him to Bristol City. He might not remember it. And obviously he's not a tighter striker. You could take to Aberdeen, but I always admired him. And I thought he'd be great for us. So when we met the first time, I sneaked him in the door and I said, look, how do you feel about it? He said, no, I would like to come back and all the rest of it. And I'd spoke to a few people involved in the Northern Ireland setup and they said, look, Kyle, we could write a million stories about Kyle, you know what I mean? And he says, but there is a switch with him. Come game day, there's a switch with him. He's on it. He'll give you, and he produces for you. And I felt that. I mean, you don't play 87 times for Northern Ireland without having been a level of player, but, you know, he is like a 34-year-old Wayne, Monday to Friday. And sometimes you need to kind of, you hear what's going on and all the rest of it, but I'm talking about that personality. I would never shy away from signing boys like that. I love boys like that. You know, I signed Jody Morris, Michael Dubry, boys that had a wee bit of reputation, a wee bit. But all these boys are brilliant. And Laugh, I would put in the same kind of category as, he always keeps you on your toes. But I think he's respectful enough to his work and what he needs to do, but a brilliant teammate, so popular with the boys.
30-year-old man, sounds like
34-year-old he is.
I know how you feel, Del.
Some managers though shy away for cancers like
that.
Why do you think that they feel challenged or?
See, when you go on all these LMA courses and they'll all say how to deal with that maverick player, the one maybe, it's not always, it's maybe the one personality one that doesn't conform to everything, or maybe the one in the team who doesn't work as hard as anybody else. And you would never aim that at laugh. Works hard, he trains. People used to say to me, oh, no train Thursday, Friday. Trained all the time for me. So whether that's him, whether there's a change in him from what we got, but he's really responded. He stepped up. And then the big games, you know, these types of people, you need them. You know, it's like the bigger the games, the bigger the performance. Mm. You get some boys who are training ground at the Nationals Monday to Friday, and then you don't see them on a Saturday. Whereas I always think laugh turns up. You know what I mean? He's there.
I was definitely one of them training grounds.
Are you?
Monday to Friday.
Yeah. I'm obsessed.
Nothing worse as a manager, is it?
Well, I've loads of players over the years that worked with, and you could be convinced to play them through their training. There's also boys who I've worked with, I'm thinking, like, do you know what? Don't look at their training because they'll be all right Saturday. And it's hard that, because every bone in your body says, you need to train better, he's murder, or any chance. But then a Saturday turns up, he's the one that gets you to go. I had a few like that at St Johnston, a few like that as a manager at different times. And sometimes, I've always had the feeling that you can't always play your way into the team through your training. You know what I mean? Because the team might be doing well and there's somebody better than you in that position, but you can play your way out of the team.
Yeah.
Someday, if you're not training right and you're cutting corners and you're having a lazy day, and I'll not accept bad practice. I like to carry on. I like to laugh and a joke with my team, but when it gets to that stage where bad practice and disrespectful to whoever coach is delivering it, it's not happening. Yeah. So people have got to train right. They've got to accept the demand of what we're doing, but sometimes there's boys who just don't train well. You know, there's boys who, a lot of the quicker players on the wee tight possessions and that, I look as if they've never kicked a ball before. You know, and I played with boys like that and I've managed boys like that. But come a Saturday, bigger pitch, big occasion, we deal with the game.
Mm-hmm. Big names, I love hearing about the big names, Brian Morris. Brilliant. Morris was a player, wasn't he?
Aye, Jody was brilliant. I was at
Millwall. A few big time shouts with you.
I think there was a time Jody would have been a bit leery and all the rest of it. You know what I mean? But he was a boy, wasn't he, at Chelsea. He grew up in a big era. I went to Millwall when Jody was injured. He'd done his cruciate and he was in the gym all the time, dedicated, battered himself. You know, he was a fit boy and we became really tight and friends. And then obviously when I left Millwall, come back to St Johnston, got the job, said to Jody, he wasn't playing. And I said, right, come up and do as a turn. And I said, it's 700 quid a week. And he's like, don't worry about the money. I says, can you get my flight to get back to see Lou and the kids every couple of weeks? I said, aye, we'll put up your accommodation. So I says to Jeff Brown, can we bring him up? And he went, aye, just go and get it done. And what a signing he was. He ran the dressing room.
That's amazing, isn't it, that?
Small in stature, but walk into the dressing room, he owned it. Mm-hmm. Everybody respected him. The softest feet to play, calmest. Running to Park Quay, running to Ibrox, had his cell. No, there was nothing fazed.
Chest was it, man.
He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Do you see when you left Aberdeen, were you itching to get straight back into a job, or did you actually feel the time you benefited for that?
No, I wasn't itching. I actually had a couple of opportunities, more or less right away. A good League One club in England had offered us a chance to come in, and it was only a week. And I thought, do you know what? I was looking forward to the break. I think sometimes when you're 14 years constant as manager, you were 8 years at Aberdeen, and I was all in at Aberdeen. I loved Aberdeen, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, if you believe how certain people's stories of how it played out, but Aberdeen was so good to me, so rewarding and so enjoyable, to be honest. It was a brilliant story. For seven and a bit years, it was a brilliant story. The way it played out at the end was disappointing, but it doesn't always finish well for people, so... but by and large it was brilliant. But I actually felt, you know, from the outside, once I was on the outside, I'm thinking, you know, although COVID was still there with travel restrictions and stuff, just wanted to go and get a couple of breaks and spend a bit of time with the family, because I was 10 years really away, almost 2 years at Bristol, 8 years Aberdeen, so you're travelling all the time, so there's a consequence of that, you know. You're just constantly working, you know. You just felt I was an Aberdeen manager, you know.
So did you stay in Aberdeen?
So I stayed a couple of nights during the week up at Stonehaven. I had a place here. My wife would come up on a Friday for the home games. And again, all my family were, you know, supported it. It was like right into it, you know. And you don't you don't invest yourself a club like that for so long, because Aberdeen never keep managers that length of time, you know. So, but there's different ways. I take real pride in how we managed to be so consistent, so good. 4 second place finishes, and we would have been a 5th second place if it hadn't been Steve McLean referee getting Motherwell goal in my first year. Obviously, ridiculous decision.
Is that the one they got in Europe last day? Was it Craig Reid that scored?
Aye.
Craig Reid putting you to Europe. Is that
Jamie Langfield got absolutely smashed last minute injury time. So it had been 5 second place finishes in 8 years. So that was good going. We cup final after cup final, Europe every year. But it's not just a trophy. I know we only win one trophy, and fans, you know, tangible success, it's trophies in it, and that's what it's a bugbear. We didn't do more, and we come up against Rodgers, Brendan Rodgers, the Celtic team who were outstanding on all the occasions, and we fell short. But there was other opportunities. But I look at, how do you judge success? It's like, I look at the international team that's full of boys that we developed and worked with. We Jacko and Scott Wright playing a European semi-final night. Kenny McLean, Ryan Christie now and playing the Premier League. Yeah, you know, Shinny, Big McKenna probably make a chance going to Premier League. So
you've made boys better as well as getting second place finishes.
And it is, it's like developing players, working close with players. But prize money, we were bringing in millions every year to Aberdeen on prize money, millions. You know, through league performance, league position, guaranteed European games at home, maybe 2 or 3 of them, semi-finals, cup finals, constantly bringing money into the club. So, you know, it was a good story there, and working with good people. It was a proper club, work every day working together, for the chairman to the girls in the kitchen, the cleaners, stadium managers, everybody. We all worked brilliantly. It was a good story. We turned, we got a good thing going up at Aberdeen, and you know, I'm not having this how it played out, and a section of the fans didn't like it. That is always the case. When you're there too long, sometimes people just get fed up with your voice, and change is good, you know, and I felt that it was probably the right time to move as well. But I was hoping to wait to the end of the season, but I didn't get the luxury of that. And this whole thing about the style and all the rest of it, we've always had a good team at Aberdeen. We've never changed style. What we did have the last season, people say, the last year wasn't a great style. And we lost Cosgrove to injury in pre-season, done his knee. But that summer we lost McKenna to Forest for a few million quid, and then we sold Sam Cosgrove, and we did get him back fit. We sold him for a couple of million in the January. But up until that season, we were getting plaudits for how we were playing. It was Hedges, Scott Wright and Marley Watkins behind in front of McCrory and Ferguson. That five centrally were outstanding. We were sitting, I think, on Boxing Day at the halfway stage in third place on 38 points. Now, if you put that in equation how well Hearts have done this year, they were in the same games, 33 points this year. So we were doing all right, but all of a sudden it was like, wasn't good enough. All of a sudden it wasn't good enough to be where we were, and we needed more. And we lost Scott Wright, with a double hernia. We lost Hedges with injury, and then eventually sold Scott Wright, and then we lost Marley Watkins in the semi-final in Celtic. And we needed help in January.
That's tough.
And we never got help. I never got help in January. We identified players. And if we had got the help we needed in the January, we would have finished third. There's no question. But we didn't. And time moves on. You know, you've got to move on. I think when clubs change owner, they're normally a change of manager. And that's just FIPA.
Even that with the 6 players that you've mentioned in your midfield attack, but you always had 2 fullbacks that would get high as well, Shane Logan. So you're always attacking with 8 players.
We tried to, you know, and latterly when we played a back 5 that last year with Johnny as a wing back.
And
we play a lot of time like a winger at right wing back, whether it was me, Matty Kennedy, or Conor McLaren. We tried to be as positive as we could. So with 3 centre backs, it gives us the size in the team and give us that wee bit of protection. But we tried to play a wee bit more off the cuff, and we tried to play with a bit more freedom and a bit more pace in the team with what we had. And to be honest, it was working. We were third, as I said to you, up until that stage. But we needed help because Cosgrove was leaving, and we needed a number 9. We were lacking in goals in that last wee period, and we were limping towards January, to be honest, and we needed to bring people in. I'd identified people to bring in, and we never managed to get them in.
You said you were wanting the break, but you surprised how long it took to get back in?
No, because I genuinely, no surprise, because there was a few other things had came up, but I'd kind of batted them away. I was applied for one job down the road that I was close to getting. At Ipswich, I'd nearly got that one, and that kind of
ended up getting that Paul Cook, was it?
No, Cookie's my mate. No, he, it's when he lost his job, Cookie. Right.
My boyfriend,
it was Kieran McKenna.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I was pretty close to getting that one. But it was again moving for the family and all the rest of it. And I don't know if I was ready for it. I think what it did tell me being out was I was enjoying being home all the time. Being able to just be spontaneous, go and play golf with the boys, be able to share the load with the training, all the demands that they've got and all the rest of it. So it was good being home every day. So I actually wasn't itching to get back. I was doing plenty of stuff for TV. I was getting my wee fix for that. But towards the last maybe few weeks, I was getting a wee bit of dugout envy, going to games and looking at the managers around the game and thinking, it's maybe time to get back in. And Kamarnock were good enough to give me that opportunity. And once they'd spoke to me and once they'd offered me, it felt right again. I said, right, I need to get my hands dirty again, get back to work.
His hands are constantly dirty.
Feel all the time.
Heard that.
You know what drives me crazy though, now, right? People are so obsessed with talking about, we want to play this right way of playing, style of playing on that night. And maybe there's some of the Aberdeen fans this style of play, but there's been many managers that have come into this season, into Scotland, who have supposedly got this amazing style of play, but can't create any chances, don't score goals, and can't win games. It's kind of went a bit crazy now, the way people talk.
Every manager's got their, for all the pomp and fanfare about what they were going to do at Aberdeen after I left, where's it been? They're now onto their second manager, with Goody, and going in there. So, and I think it is a bit dangerous to set yourself up to say, I'm not just talking about Aberdeen, I'm talking in general, as you say, Slaney, about, well, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Your job's to win games, you know what I mean? And ideally, you would like to, I think your job as a manager is to help the team. Whatever you've got in the dressing room is to try and, right, get these boys winning games. And ideally, you would maybe, I like to have pace in my team. I like to have enough pace in the team that can cause teams problems, even the threat of pace. Mm-hmm. You like to have passes. People said that, but my Aberdeen teams were proper teams. You know, you don't play long ball or direct when you've got Kenny McLean, Graham Shinney, Ryan Jack, Ryan Christie, yeah, James Madison, Gary Mackay Stevens, Niall McGinn, Johnny Hayes. You know, yeah, you've got to find a way to isolate your pace in the team. You've got good passes in the team. But at times you've got to be pragmatic and get the job done. And, you know, if it means playing a certain way to get over the line, then so be it. I spoke to David Moyes a couple of months ago, and he was saying how, you know, it's almost as if he's seen as a bit of a dinosaur at times because his centre-halves don't take the ball for the goal in a six-yard box. And he says this whole rule of thumb that your defenders are now the guys, and you watch the game in England, who get the most touches, they get the ball.
You see it on Sky Sports News.
And we used to always have, like, get defenders to get the ball so they can play. And, you know, it's almost kind of turned on its head that, you know, I think what he had said, Davey said, you've got defenders who are footballers, maybe midfielders' feet, but maybe don't know how to defend the way traditional defenders defended. So you're asking fullbacks to be 50 yards for them, centre-halves to be split. And then when they're asked to defend, they don't have the capacity to deal with it. So if you've got good defenders, 1v1 defenders, then you can be a wee bit braver with your setup. If you've got players with pace at the back, you can go with that high press. So it's whatever you've got. And I look at managers a lot of the time up and down the country when I'm watching games, and I see them obsessed with how they want to play. They've clearly set up and worked on how to play Monday to Friday. But when it's no going right and their players are looking for help and they're no getting it, the manager's still got this kind of, no arrogance is maybe too bold, but this kind of opinion, or this is the way we do it. Wait a minute, mate, your team's getting scudded again. Do you know what I mean? Deal with the game to help your players out. It's not about you. And too many, I think it's about them.
I know you would never like to see Aberdeen then bad, but do you almost feel vindicated with the season that they've had?
Do you know what?
Vindicated's a good word for me, isn't it?
He's on the sheet though.
That is on the sheet.
I think that, you know, the standards have clearly dropped, and that's why there's obviously been a couple of changes now. But, you know, there's good players there, you know, and there's good opportunity for Jim now to go in and put his own stamp on things. But there's good players there. I'm still close with a lot of players, still close with a lot of the support staff, the playing staff, and stadium staff and all the rest of it. So I know it's been a frustrating season. But it just shows you, you know, in Aberdeen, regardless of what budget's afforded to you and all the benefits you get, you've got to use it right. You've got to still, recruitment's got to be good decisions got to be made. And it's the same up and down all over with football clubs. I think Aberdeen had been twice in Europe in 10 years before we got there. So this isn't if you don't work right as a club Monday to Friday, if you don't make good decisions made, then sometimes you don't deliver what you want to deliver and what is expected of you. And, you know, what you managed to do was try to, I think, utilise what was afforded to us with better resources in St Johnston, better budget. You then take the benefit of that and try and get better players. But it's no easy. It's no easy keeping good players. We had to I talk about it as a massive year. Rebuild. We had a rebuild every year.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's the job as a manager. Good players and good teams normally get taken away from you. And that was what was constantly happening. So it has been disappointing for them. But, you know, I'm moved on for Aberdeen. I've had my time. My job is a commander and what's next for me and working with my club now. So, but I look back with real pride. There's none of this. No matter, people say certain things about how it ended and all the rest of it. You can't change. The narrative was a good story. We were a good story at Aberdeen and they'll tell me any different.
No matter how close you are with people, so you and Craig Brinstall go out 3 nights a week.
I don't speak to Craig much. No,
then I
still, I don't. But I still go off with Stuart Milne and keep in touch with directors and stuff. And, you know, you don't work at a club for 8 years and you don't build good relationships, you know what I mean?
What about players-wise? Who was good characters at your time up at Aberdeen? Who was good for you?
Matt Reynolds, Adam Rooney, you know Rooney.
Rooney's a good boy, isn't he? Boring as fuck, but good boy. Is he a boy?
Shinny, Ryan Jack, all the boys. Like McKenna was a great boy. McKenna at 16, you just knew. You just knew he was the right boy. He was always with the kit man. He was last hauling in all the gear for training. Trained with short sleeves, black boots, just did everything right. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just, you wanted good things to happen for him and he was always a good boy. And there was no real surprise with him. And a little bit old school that way, whereas a lot of the young ones now are more interested in their followers and their toilet bags and all the bollocks that comes with that. And their biggest influences a lot of times are their agents and their buds rather than just their coaches and their senior players. You know what I mean? I like senior players to take an interest in the young boys and develop relationships like that. We always tried to foster that at Aberdeen and create that kind of culture. So we'd get the senior players to take an interest in the kids. So it was like centre forward, Rooney with a young striker, Rooney and Bruce Anderson, or midfielders with a midfielder, and just try and build that relationship and take an interest in them.
As long as Adam Rooney wasn't teaching them first touch.
No, you said that. But we always, see the thing with Rooney is we always...
Great guy, man.
And he scored 3 seasons in a row, 20-odd goals. And for a free transfer, he's up there with one of the best signs I've ever made. I loved Adam Rooney. And a lot of the time, your main striker, we talk about that in Monday to Friday training and stuff like that. But Rooney was... He always felt he's going to pitch. He always had in his head, I'll get 3 or 4 chances. And the thing about him, when he missed his first one, it didn't bother him. It bothered him when he scored, but he was always ready for the next one. And it's almost as if, and I mean this with the greatest respect to Adam, we played with 10 men and Rooney. We needed to get Rooney, and Adam wouldn't he always get you up the pitch, taking it in or running or being big enough. But you wouldn't want anybody else on the end box of things. You know what I mean? He was different class for me.
What about his brother, Johnny Hayes?
Johnny, wee Isa we call him. Wee Isa, him and
how's it? Have you gossip?
Oh, he's always got stories. Oh, do you hear this? Do you hear this? Johnny's got a 2-minute window with me. I can't understand him anyway, but he sent me a message the other day. They're asking me to sign a wee testimonial for him for his CV for his doing his coaching badges, isn't it? And I just put Johnny Hayes is fast. And that's it. But no, he was brilliant for me in both spells, Johnny. He came back with a different mentality, obviously having won things at Celtic and the demand on Celtic, but he's still as quick as ever and a big part of the dressing room. He was a brilliant boy for me. I remember the first game at Aberdeen towards the end of the season, and I'd just about to name the team, and he went down as he does a wee bit of drama queen, Johnny's in training, he's like holding his ankle. I'm like, I'm stunned over him. Physio's run on. I'm just about to name a team day set player. My first game for Aberdeen. I says, "You all right?" And he's like, "Yeah." I says, "Come on, fuck." I says, "I'm building my team around about you tomorrow." I says, "I need you to play." And he looked at me and they gave you the job. So he was good character, Johnny. He was life and soul.
He came to the Hydro, mate, and we met him at St. Amasimit. He came up to me, right, and I could not understand a fucking word he said to me. No, he just kept talking about how great
he mumbles, doesn't he?
He mumbles.
Yeah, he mumbles.
See, I remember I played against Ryan Jack when I was young, right? We sort of competed against each other, but I never thought
he remembers it. No. I'm joking.
We should never ask that. No, did you, could, see when he was at Aberdeen, did you think he was going to go on? Because you're a real leader for Rangers now, aren't you?
No, I think you say it's like playing against Aberdeen with St Johnston, I always recognised he was a decent player, but he always seemed to be right back when he played against us. And we first went in, and I loved him right away. I just loved the way he was demanding in training, backed out at people, get frustrated with people not doing things right, took the ball. He was your best player in training. He was everybody's first pass. I'm thinking, love this boy. At times, you could have had a bigger Ranger pass at times at that age, I felt, but he kept the ball for you. Total trust. I mean, Russell Anderson is captain. Russell was a great captain and a natural captain. But after that first season, Russell was retiring. And I had a decision to make, and I just I said to Jack, I says, you'll be the captain, building the team around about you, set midfielder. As soon as we went in, we made him set midfielder. And he was a great captain. I mean, the only thing is, every time I made somebody captain, so Jacko left and then Shinny left, but brilliant. Jacko, he makes teams better. He made my Aberdeen team better. He makes Rangers better. I think he makes Scotland better, to be honest. I know Scotland are well looked after in midfield, but Jacko would play my Scotland team as well.
I need to ask you about two other players that have just sprung to my mind, because you've said about having good older pros, Barry Robson, Willow Flood.
Well, they
two
were
characters, aren't they?
Well, we looked at Aberdeen, and I remember when we went in and Craig and Archie were still taking the team, and I went to Tannadice to watch the last game before the split, and whoever won it was in top six. And so Dot was actually doing watching Sheffield United, watching Barry against
Barry who, sorry?
Robson, right, against Crewe, because I think I went to Tannadice. So I'm watching the game, and wee Willow was trampling all over Aberdeen midfield, right? He single-handedly drove Dundee United into top six. He was all over the game, fiery, narky, but good on the ball, getting forward, winning tackles. And Aberdeen were passive on the day, a huge support down at Tannadice, and Aberdeen ended up in the bottom six. And I jumped into the motor, and I phoned Dot. I says, Willow's my first signing. I said, tell me about Robson, because I played with Barry. Rangers is a young boy, at Rangers, and I had him at Dundee United, played with him at Dundee United. I says, how was Robson? He went, murder. Couldn't tell you to sign him. He says, he played him in the time, and we tell Barry this all the time. So I phoned Willow's agent and the way home. I said, I want to meet Willow. So I went to Willow's house on the Monday. He says, come to the house at 4 o'clock. I went in. He wasn't obviously prepared for me coming. I was dirty washing everywhere in the house.
He always looks fucking knackered, Willow, as well, didn't he?
But I just felt I need to get this boy. And we probably had to go a couple hundred quid more to get him. But we got him. But I took the 200 quid half Barry's offer and gave it to Willow.
Oh, you hate that, man.
So sitting with Barry. So I went with Willow, and I used to go and meet either at Stuart Milne's house at Glen Eagles with players for trying to sign him, try to give him the big sale and impressive or nice hotel, whatever. And I met Barry for signing talks in Nashville, Chippy in Aberdeen. And I made him pay for it. So we're sitting and he's going, aye, so that's me back with my season of kids and just getting the kids into school. We bought a house in Inverurie. I'm like, keep talking. And he's like, can I get 2 years? I'm not going to need 2 years. I'll give you a year. He's like, oh, come on. I need 2 years, a wee bit of security. I says, no. He says, well, I might have other options. He says, you've just bought a house. You're going to school. The wings are going to school.
Where are you
going to
go?
He went, aye, all right. And I says, I have any money, you need to pay for this trip. So he tells his story. He says, all the other ones get spoiled. He says, I didn't even get my dinner paid for. So he signed, and Barry was brilliant.
What a player, man.
Do you know what? Physical. I love Barry. The one game where... it's quite synonymous with Barry, because him and Willow always took responsibility. They didn't give a shit if the fans were booing it on each.
Yeah.
Fans were on their back. And a lot of people, are you talking about that, people, boys disappearing? You know, it's difficult playing at Aberdeen at home and things aren't going well, and the fans expect more. But Willow would give the ball away, but then just go and get it again. He would just constantly take responsibility, and Robson was the same. Robson was brilliant for me, the two of them. Barry used to always say, aye, Russell Anderson's a great captain. He can sort the tickets. I'll take the boys down the tunnel. But he was a brilliant personality. And when it came to the end, obviously I had Shinny, Jacko, Willow, Kenny, McLean, Barry, every other Monday, chat at the door. I'm like, what? And he's like, just think I can get in the team. I think I can still sell me off. And I'm like, instead of who?
Yeah.
You know, who are you got? And he's like, no, but...
That's brilliant, isn't it?
Brilliant. So, and see, to be honest, I used to get him to play in the reserve teams up at Peterhead, the reserve games. And he didn't even know, it was just a subconscious thing, but he was developing other players. He was brilliant for McKenna, you know, playing with the young boys. And I do think there is a place for senior players playing in youth teams and, you know, in under 23 teams, because bringing them on, he didn't even know, he was just being him.
Yeah.
He was actually bringing on the next generation of players. And And I wanted to keep him. We actually created a role for him, and the club were good to support me on that because I didn't have a place in the staff, but I didn't want to let him go.
It was good to pick up the cones after every session, wasn't it? That role you created for him, that was good. I played against you in reserves when I was about 16 year old. You only remember it, you at United.
You should have brought
it, didn't you? Oh, that's what I'm saying. It was only you played against older guys like that, you learn more in that 90 minutes than you do fucking 5 year.
See, I think we've lost a bit of that, to be honest. I remember one of my first reserve games for Morton. Celtic sent down a team on a Tuesday, and it was like Alan McKnight, Mick McCarthy, Paul McStay, Mark McGee, Owen Archdeacon, Tony Shepherd, riddled with top players. And you actually think you come out and go, how shite am I? You're playing against Paul McStay, miles off it. But that whole playing the reserve team in the Prem with Morton in the Premier League, playing against good players, that's worth its weight in gold, you know what I mean, for development for young players. And I do think you need to expose young players, you need to test them, you need to stretch them, don't let them get comfortable. And I think academy football all becomes a bit too a bubble and insular, and it's the same boys playing against the same boys for each team for years and years and years, and we need to find a way to challenge them there.
That's a managerial clinic, isn't
it? He's brilliant, he really is. I can see why he's been successful everywhere, but see when it comes down to manager size and when it comes to your former managers, if you took any of their sort of style into your management,
I just want to be a manager that I would have wanted to play for. I look at people now, even guys I didn't meet, managed to play under people talking, and I'm going, love to have played for him. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's other ones you hear them blagging on and bluffing and going, wouldn't know for me, I couldn't have played for him. You know, and I think that I was lucky, I had a great development with Alan McGraw, and I'll think back at Morton. You know, he was restricted with his knees and stuff like that, but, you know, taking the time with me to after games, sitting on a Monday with a cup of tea in his office. You know, sometimes a young boy, you're looking for the door to get out, right, is this over now, you know what I mean? But he'd make you feel so comfortable and give you the confidence. And he would get through chapter and verse, your performance in the game, and even when you were murdered and made mistakes, he would make you feel you were better than what you actually were. And that's brilliant. That, for me, any manager who took the time to invest in me and took the time to speak to me and believe in me, that made me feel 100 feet tall. Do you know what I mean? Worth everything. And we've got a saying with the staff, and like make them feel important. So before we go, I've got always go to the top of my training sheet before we go out for training, make them feel important. And that's your job, is to try and get performances out of boys. And Walter Smith was a master at that. You know what I mean? I just needed a well done for him. See, we just said to the guy, just went, well done. That was me made up. Because if I'd satisfied him, and Gary Megson was another one who, for a manager who actually, he'd rinsed everything out of our squad. For us to win that first promotion at West Brom to the Premier League when there was so many other teams with far more resource and all the rest of it, that's proper management. He was hard on us. He was, he never let up. He was proper on us all the time. Never seemed to be satisfied, never seemed to be happy, but he was relentless with his demands on us, and we were the fittest team, the hardest working team. And we ended up going up with Man City and the Premier League. And I still, to this day, I can't have enough praise for him, how he managed to get us up there. He was outstanding.
Walter Smith, obviously, he's brilliant. Well, you've talked about man management a lot. Was the brilliance of him that he could look after personalities like Gascoigne, McCoist?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't appreciate really the challenges he would have had. You know, I'd always heard good things about the gaffer, and when I went to Rangers,
Do you remember him asking you to sign for Rangers though?
Aye.
What, so you just sat in your house?
No. So there was, I knew Rangers had been watching us, and I was all set to go down south, and then Rangers came in, and because I had a clause in the contract, it came a wee bit messy for Morton at the end up, but because I had a clause, because I'd felt that Morton had asked for too much money and denied me opportunities before, when I re-signed, I put that clause in, and Rangers met the clause. So while Morton were getting more money for other teams, I wanted to go to Rangers. When I was due to meet Walter, my dad was a huge Rangers fan, and I asked him to come along with me. I mean, I think back even now, just that people touch. I mean, he's a huge manager by that stage. He'd done so much, and he was dealing with key players, you say. But when he brought me in, into his office up the stairs, and I was never in that office again. It was only the bad boys that went up there. You know, you never really go into the gaffer's office up the stairs at the top of the staircase. And he came in and he said, right, Derek, you go away with the physios and get your medical. He says, I'll sit with your dad. And when I came back in, it's about 11:30, and there's my dad sitting with Walter having a can of lager, the two of them.
No way.
Aye, and I'm thinking, I'm like my dad, dead. You know what I mean? And he's like, oh, Walters. I'm like, Walter, aye, you go to school, man? Do you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, the two of them, no, and Walter made him feel at home. He just kind of, I think he recognised it was a big deal.
For your dad.
Do you know what I mean? For my dad. And that means a lot, to be honest. When I think back at that, just those, that wee touch, I was away getting a medical. God knows how I passed the medical because my knees were short, but I was away for a couple of hours. And then I came back and my dad had a ball. Do you know what I mean? So, it meant a lot, that. So, and Walter had that about him, that kind of human side, you know. And, you know, I had a couple of, I wasn't as close to him as other players were, because I always felt I had his trust. I always felt as though that if I was fit and I had loads of injuries, that he liked me being there and then about things. But there was always better players ahead of me in the starting team. But I remember I'd played every round of the League Cup. And I'd been involved in every league game that year as well, either starting or on the bench, in the 9-0 season. We played the League Cup final against Hearts, and I remember I was sitting, that was the time when there was only three subs and one was always a goalie. So I remember we were sitting at the meeting at 1:30 at Ibrox, and it was me, Big Oz and Charlie, and the three of us were sitting. And we're doing the mass here, going, by the way, a couple of us are not going to go on the bench here. And then I says to me, Charlie, and I says, why don't we split two bonuses amongst the three of us? And me, Charlie, had a good week, right? And Charlie, I can see Charlie biting his nails. And Big Oz like, nah, I'm not having that. And he says, if you're not on the pitch, don't get the bonus. And Charlie's thinking about it, and Charlie went, nah, I'll take my chances. So Gaffer names the team. And I'm thinking, I've scored in the quarter final against Ayr, I've scored in the semi final against Dunfermline. At least I'll definitely be on the bench. Nice. You know what I mean? So the name of the team and the subs, and I looked to her, and Charlie was like, maybe when the gaffer walked to it, he went, and I'm fucking raging, right? I'm going like that. So, I'm trying to get his attention, walking onto the bus, going to Parkhead. The final was at Parkhead. I said, so about that bonus thing? They're like, do one, right? So I'm sitting up there, and they'd named Peter Van Vossen, Theo Schnelders, and David Robertson, who came from anywhere. David had been injured for whatever, I don't even know he was training, but he came from nowhere, and the gaffer put him on the bench, right? And I'm thinking, I was raging. That was,
so you can see him.
So after we won it, having a wee do back at the club, and we're all talking to the gaffers, and we're on the dance floor, and he's like, McInnes, come here. And he's like, Matt, and he's trying to give me a cuddle, and I'm like, what's that all about? And he's like, come see me tomorrow. And I said, what was that all about? I'm trying to have a conversation. He's like, see me tomorrow. So I was in 10 o'clock next morning, chaps the door, and I walks in, and I says, and he pulled out a medal, and he stood up, shook on, gave me the medal. He says, you've got a medal, you've earned that, you've played in every round. He says, I'll make sure you get the full bonus. So right away, I'm kind of, my anger's kind of, and he said, Dale, once you come this side of it, he said, I needed a striker on the bench, and I needed a goalie. And he says, and David Robertson has earned my loyalty for the last 3 or 4 years. And in time, you'll get the benefit of that. And when you become a manager, you're leaning boys like that. So I'm like, everything I was rhyming up to say, I was like,
thanks very much, get
a full bonus, aye.
Yeah, that's genius,
aye. So there was reasons for it. And listen, you know, even when I'm picking a bench now, and it was a bit easier last season with 9 subs. And you've got an ability to try and keep everybody right and happy, but there were still times you had to leave good boys out. And
you know, is that the toughest part I had done?
It can be, but I think it's important as a manager you don't dwell on it too much, because your focus is needed on your starting 11. That's what you need. You can't be, you know, and I always was one of these managers who at times would maybe, I'd like to, 9 times out of 10, I like to name my team on a Friday and go through what we need to do, because I like to be prepared, and I like my team to be prepared. But there is times where I think, Joe, I'm going to sleep on it if you're wrestling with something. And I remember Walter had done that a lot. He says, sometimes wake up on a Saturday and go with your gut, just whatever your first thought is, that's your. And then Sir Alex Ferguson, when you speak to him, he'll say, nah, I can think of worse. I always like to have my team on a Friday. He says, I need a good sleep. So he says, many times you can settle on your team, settle on your subs Friday night, get a good kip. It's so important that you're fresh. And see, to be honest, since I went to Kilmarnock, I've done that. I've tried to be settled with everything, wake up Saturday morning.
Off your mind. Yeah. You usually wrestle with someone in bed, but
it's certainly not that. That's for sure. Certainly not that. It's a bad one for me today. Del C, you see, did Waltersmith ever struggle with Gaza at all?
No. He was good with him, and obviously, he turned a blind eye to loads. And he was always a wee bit like that with the goalie as well. You know, the goalie was the best goalkeeper I've ever played with. He was outstanding, and you know, Andy would come in the morning grumpy and could see he'd had a bevy and that, and he would just sit there, gloves on, no speak to anybody. And then he'd go out and perform, couldn't beat him. 1v1s, saving everything. And then as soon as his training was over, right, where are we going? It was a different character again. And the gaffer loved Andy, and we all loved Andy, and these characters in the dressing room. And with Gaza, it was, he couldn't sleep. He was hyperactive, and he was up to all sorts at night. He used to come in with the waders going up to the air, a wee tiny tie for John Gregg. Wear my shirt and tie. And he was just always keeping, must have kept the gaffer on his toes. It was only a couple of times that ever kind of really got a hand, and it was towards the end. The gaffer, you know, team meetings could rip into him, you know, and leave Gaz in tears, to be honest.
Maybe,
have that effect. I never seen the gaffer blow too much, but the two or three times I did, it was nae pretty. So, and because we had so much respect for him, and for, you didn't want to, you would never disrespect him, you know. I was listening to that my playlist came on. It was the Eagles Essentials came on. I'm driving down to Kilmarnock last week, and just takes me back to the gaffer coming in at the gym. I'd always been in the gym late on in the afternoon, and he'd come in, just took the music off, put the Eagles on, and him batting it and go, "Real fucking music, McInnes, don't say a word." And he used to sing, and he was murder. He used to sing, top of his voice, and you're thinking, "Man, any chance, get this off?" You know what I mean?
What would he do? Running machine or?
Running machine, bike, everything. Him and Archie at the fair.
Good Nick, was he awesome?
Yeah, brilliant. Aye, he was good Nick. So him and Archie used to either run around the pitch forever. It was the slowest jog, but they were running. Or in the gym, batting it every day, they were doing something. Or heat tennis. Heat tennis was legendary.
The boys need to ref it?
Boys used to ref it, and that was what you didn't want. It was like, Archie would just turn around, "You're the ref." And it was like,
oh no, that's horrible.
So, and thing is, I remember, things on. You couldn't, nobody was, once you were in the dressing room and the game started, you couldn't get out. Nobody could get in. Like the loud on that, when they go and pick his way up for school and stuff like that.
Who was better at the two then? Better player?
Gaffer was brilliant in it because he was taller, but Archie was
good player.
He could get about. He would never get up. You'd need to kill Archie in a fight. He would need. He would be the two of them or just winners. You know what I mean? It meant everything. You know what I mean? So
why is Fitbun not like that anymore?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it can be.
Did you do that? We
set up head tennis every morning, and it's there. I think head tennis is good for you.
Amazing, mate. Touch,
touch, anticipation.
Yeah.
But I hate people who play head tennis just because, oh, you're telling to play head tennis and they just get through the motions. See, if I'm in a team with somebody and the boy's not trying as hard as me, it's like they're not playing the Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Can't be doing it. And it's, and it is good for you. It is good for you. So we do it every day. We take on the young boys and take on players all the time, and you see young boys and that getting better.
Yeah. It's too basic for some modern day managers now, isn't it?
I don't like it.
It needs to be more complicated.
So, the gaffer was brilliant at dealing with all those personalities, and you can only imagine the pressure he was under. But I think I became really close to the gaffer when I became a manager, to be honest. It was more that I thought I was always close to him, and then he left and Dick came in, and Dick was totally different. You know, it was the end of an era for a lot of our boys. It was, Dukie was away, we Stuart McCall, Goffey, Andy, Durante, Coyston, nobody was getting contracts. Myself and Ian Ferguson getting another year. And it was a different dressing room. It went from being probably the guys who didn't drink being frowned upon to the guys who did drink, all of a sudden you were the ones that were there. And I had to change that culture. Probably did have to change, but it was good. It was interesting, Advocat, but it was, he had the strongest team. We used to do 11v11 every day.
Every day.
So, so even on a Monday, you wouldn't do it as long, obviously, on a Monday, but you knew the team on a Saturday. And it's demoralising that
for the full week
on the fringes, I think.
So would he stop that 11v11 quite a bit, Dale? Have you seen something like that?
But it was just that repetition. You know, it was a lot of passing. Something wrong with loads of good players, and some of his players he signed, like Giovanni and that, were brilliant players. We had some good times at that time. I'd done my cheekbone in training. Tony Vidmar elbowed me, cheekbone collapsed. And I always remember I was lying, I was in agony, and the physio came running on and seen Advocat come around. He's like, "Hey, McInnes, your bib." And he just took the bib off. Took my bib and gave it to me, Barry Nicholson. I'm like, "I'm all right, aye." So I went to, when I came back for that fractured cheekbone, it was October, November, and I asked to go on loan. Because then it was near a window or anything like that. And Stockport, who's in the Championship at the time, Gary Megson, and he'd come up to watch a reserve game against Celtic that I'd played at Ibrox. And he phoned my agent the next day and he just says, look, I'd like to take Derek. So we got that set up and I went there for 14, 15 games. Loved it. Loved it. I met Cookie, who's one of my best mates now, and a load of boys are still keeping touch.
Good player, weren't you, Cookie?
Cookie was a good player. So we were mid-table in the Championship, you know, and Stockport were just a small provincial club. They're doing well again and they're going the right way again. But it was brilliant. And it was one of the ones where I was enjoying it that much, playing every week again after I had all my injury problems, that I wasn't so bothered about going back. But Dick wanted to come back to be part of the squad. And he said to me, look, says, you've done well, been watching you. And just, so I was on the fringes it still. But then he played me in the cup final against Celtic and we won the treble, which made it all worthwhile, to be honest. So he had the trust in me in that one. And then when I left Gary Megson, he says, look, if I ever get to a proper club that I can afford to get you, you'll be my first signing. And to be fair, when he went to West Brom, I was that. So, you know, it was good. Rangers was special at the time with Walter in particular. Our dressing room will never be beaten. We're still pals in the group chat and it can get a bit lively at times, but great memories.
Is McCoy's the man?
He is. He's still a bit sensible more these days, honestly, but he's a... He still got his moments. We still golf and that, and he's a neighbour. But he loves all the crack with the boys, you know. I mean,
try and get him to the hydro for us, mate, will you?
Hydro? Aye.
Can you get him to do it?
I'll say to him, aye.
Great to go up there, have a wee drink with you too, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's the dream, mate. Would you invite us up to the house? Us to you and Coyston?
Coyston. See the size of Coyston's house?
It's a massive.
Massive.
That's it. Aye. Be great to go up there.
You used to say, my driveway's that big, I've got a wimpy in it.
He was gorgeous as well, McCoy's back in the day.
I always remember my first game going to Ibrox. We were playing Partick Thistle, my debut, and we're driving in on the Friday, and Coy's like, he says, we'll just go in together tomorrow, because he liked a pint after it, right? So, and I said, aye, fine. He says, so who's driving? He's like, you're driving. I says, right, well, fine, I'll pick you up. So pre-match, off 11 upstairs in the kitchen. So I says, I'll get you about 10 to 11. He said, aye, still sitting there at 10 past, and a quarter past, and I'm shite myself, because I'm going to be late, my first game. He came swinging down the papers, and all right, reading the papers, like, well, plenty of time. So I'm driving like loony, right? Make sure. Imagine being late your first
that's
day.
The worst, man.
And I've hit a pothole, and he's like, oh, I've got somebody else to drive me in next week. he says I've only got an extra year because you get banned for driving.
your time at Rangers was who would you say was the best player? And I don't like asking that question, but just.
Do you know what? It was Gazza was the best player, technical player. There was nobody as good as Gazza that way. We could do these two-minute possessions you do, men on the side, 4v4, whatever.
Yeah.
There was times you could keep the ball for the 2 minutes. Just holding people up, bouncing it off the side, men keeping it. And you know how, 2 minutes is a long time in these possessions, but he was outstanding. Loudrop probably produced those big moments for us more than Gazza. Yeah. You know what I mean? Loudrop was a match winner so often. And the difference in a lot of the games, but Coyste was outstanding. Charlie Miller, brilliant players, you know. I mean, and a lot of the foreign players that came in, such a good level, you know, and good pros like Jonas Tern and Kanchelskis, all these guys that he played with. But I would say if you're just talking about the pure essence of the word football, the best football would be Gazza.
Obviously, Barry Ferguson was a young player coming through. When you were there, you went on to manage his nephew Lewis. Was there any comparisons there between the two?
No, probably just an inner belief and determination. Barry was always a lot spoken about Barry coming through, and a few times used to come up and train with Gaffer and Archie, and they were quite hard on him as well, and it was all part of that development. Barry Robson were pals. They came through together as well.
I
had no ITS. And they were the kind of bad boys, always had to deal with the gaffer's breakfast and the gaffer's boots and all that. So, and they were seen as the ones that had to be watching, you know what I mean? So, but I think it was all part of the development. Barry was as good a midfield player in the generation. He was outstanding. He would get in any best Rangers 11 for me.
You think so, Dan?
I thought he was outstanding. Barry
and could you tell that straight away as soon as he came up?
I played with his head up, great hips, switch a player left and right, bit about him, could score goals if he was playing a bit forward, great decision maker, short and long passing. He had everything for me, we Fergie. I thought he was outstanding. I even remember the his debut at Tynecastle, because it was after we had won 9 in a row. We still had Hearts to play. And Gaffer had just says, this was the Tuesday night, he says, we'll see you Friday. And it was. Gaz had turned up still with his strip on, one flip flop and one shoe. And, so Friday at 1 o'clock, we're on the in for training. And Gaffer had a meeting. He says, right, I want every day. Yeah, we're all going to the hotel. We're getting shaved, we're getting a proper wash, we're going to do a wee few jump laps of the pitch. But we need to look like a team tomorrow, make sure we turn up. And he went to Gaza, Jurgen Heim, make sure you're at the stadium for 1:30 and you're playing 90 minutes. And Gaza,
just sitting like, oh God, right.
So Fair, we thought Fergie was going to make his debut. The gaffer hadn't named the team, and we thought Fergie was going to get his debut that day. So I remember on the Friday night, we're sitting, and David Murray had asked that the gaffer and Archie round for dinner at his place in Edinburgh. So we'd had dinner, and of course he's like, dodgy. David Dodge says, like, boys are going to get a couple of beers. He's like, you know, enough. He says, just going to get a couple of beers. And he says, out of the room, play a game of cards. He says, well, the gaffer's told me he's checking the rooms at 10 o'clock. So I'm just warning you, if that's what you want to do, fair enough. So we're in the room playing cards now. It's getting a bit lively. I always remember McCoy's picking the phone up. He's like, who am I speaking to? The room says, he's like, me boy Michael. He's like, right, Michael, it's Alan McCoy's here. He says, you bring 12 Budweisers up, son, every 20 minutes. And we'll look after you, right? So we're all sitting, me Fergie sitting in amongst it. He's no drinking but Fergie. So he's sitting, dilling out the curls and all that. And me doing it, he's going, cheer him, 16 year old, you know what I mean? Play the girls, bold as brass. And next minute the phone goes, and it was, before that, it was a brilliant card game with Gaza and Charlie. Gaza's just got that much money, right? He was just going blind all the time, right? Right? So Charlie's sitting with a flush, proper hand. He's going, just matching it. So everybody's out in the skin on. Gaz just putting the money in, going blind. So Charlie's having to go double all the time. He's going, Gaz, I just repeat your cards, right? So honestly, the best ever, that's right. So there's about all sorts in the pot, right? Couldn't even begin to tell you how much money's in the pot, right? So eventually, like, Gaz, well, why do you play cards here? So he's like, turns his card, three. He just grabbed the money. Charlie just kicked it. Honestly, it was the best ever. And then the phone goes, and it was dodgy. Gaffer and Archie checking the rooms. You're a clown, you're an idiot, you're all anyway. So the gaffer walks in. All the beers and bottles are behind the big curtains, and it was a big Caledonia Hotel on Princes Street. And he comes in, the guy just looks here, and he's like, it was wee Greg Shields. Shields, Miller, Wilson, Ferguson, Bed. And Charlie's like, I'm hope it tell. I'm all right here. So they all left, right?
And I know what's going to happen here, brilliant.
So he goes over the phone, he's like, Michael, it's Walter Smith here. And he's like, can I have 10 Budweisers and a bottle of champagne, son? Put the phone down.
Sat and played cards.
He didn't sit and play cards, but another round of drinks, you know what I mean?
And brilliant. Amazing, right,
get your bed, you know what I mean? So
it's unreal.
I always remember doing the warm-up that day, and wee John Robertson had to score 2 goals to beat Willie Ball's record at Hearts or something. And of course, he's shouting at him, if you don't beat it today, you'll never beat it. Beat us 3-1. I scored that day, by the way. That's the best part of the story, aye. So,
did he get his 2 goals?
He got his 2 goals. Did he, right? We'd all go, aye. But then it was the helicopter thing back to the club. The celebrations, that. It was brilliant. So special, that. And it was a special group of boys. We all loved each other, do you know what I mean? And we'd do anything for each other. And the gaffer having to try and manage all those different personalities, it says a lot about him. And he didn't always have it easy. There was a lot of pressure on the gaffer, do you know what I mean, to deliver that 9 in a row. And you've seen that 10 in a row just fell short. You've seen it's happened now with, and it's Jock Steen, Neil Lennon and Walter never quite managed a 10, yeah. You know what I mean? So but he was a brilliant manager. Really miss him, you know what I mean? It's like, still can't believe it. He's away, to be honest. And he was such a confidant for me, somebody I could lean on. I'm probably guilty of not leaning on too many people. I think you always try to find your own way, and I've never been one to look for too much advice, but he was always the first port of call for me all the time. So I became really close to him as a manager. Went to a few LMA dinners together and stuff like that, and we always got...
Was he good company there?
As good a company as you'll get, aye.
Can just talk to him about everything?
Aye, drinking the red wine and away. And there were so many other players who were close to him because they had built those relationships over years. But I felt latterly I got an indication of what that was like as a manager, because I felt me and him were close. And I think he liked to help me, and he liked when I phoned him, you know. So it's a shame that he's gone too early. It's just a massive loss for everybody.
So you said obviously about Advocaat naming his team on a Monday. So you knew on a Monday if you weren't playing on a Saturday. Was there resi games in between that and any of the big players that knew they were going to
every game, every week, every other week you'd maybe try to get involved in the reserve game. Because you're playing 11 v 11, you got good fitness for that anyway. So, and he always used to say, you're paid well to be ready. So that was his thing. But I remember one time, it was at the time when Big Alberts and Kinshelsey said, can I be squeezed out the team a wee bit? And we were playing Aberdeen at Pittodrie on the Tuesday night.
In the reserves?
In the reserves. So Bert Van Lingen comes in after training the Monday and he puts his squad list up right away. Charlie's there. He's you're in it, not Dale, and laughing. Right? We're going to Pittodrie on Tuesday night and then he turned and went, Kinshelsey, you're in it, right? And everybody's first out laughing. And Andre's like, what? He's like, you're in it, you're going to Aberdeen. He's like, I'll not be going to Aberdeen. And Bert Van Lingen heard him. He went, oh, you'll be there. And he went, I fucking won't. So obviously Bert's went up to tell the gaffer. So me dick comes down, storming down. He went, you think you're special, Kinshelsey? You think you're special? You know, go to Aberdeen. He went, listen, no reserves at Fiorentina, no reserves at Everton, no reserves at Man United, no fucking reserves at Rangers, right? And we'd all sit like that. And he went, you'll be there, Kinshelsey. He's like, I fucking won't. He went, it'll be 2 weeks' wages, 2 weeks' wages, you'll be there. And Andre just went in his coat, his blazer, pulls his checkbook, writes out, and he just threw it. Me dick was raging. Charlie's 2 weeks' wages. Charlie's like, what's he on? He's laughing at me. So we're sitting, going up to Pittodrie on the Tuesday, and Charlie's like, I'd love to be able to do that.
And was that the end of Kinshelsey's after that?
I don't know if it was the end. It was just a clash. Like, a player like that's not going to be happy no playing, do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. But Andre was a brilliant boy. He was he just immersed himself in the club, and he was interacting with the young boys, and he was different class. I also remember the time as well, when his first day, we used to sit together, and because it was short and thigh and Andre came in, he was in the shower still, and Charlie's had his old socks on for the day before, and the socks here, so Charlie just went into Andre's shoes and put his socks on, right? So we're up for having lunch, and I think one of the things we had with Kat, so half one we used to go up for lunch, and we couldn't eat until he used to sit down and go, right, you enjoy your lunch. So I was like, waiting for half
no one. Way.
It was. So sitting there, right?
Yeah, do that.
So Andre's keeps storming in. He went, who's doing my fucking socks? Right? And Charlie's like, Charlie's butting his wee hanger, right? He's like, who's doing my fucking Charlie kicking me in the tail? He's like, don't say nothing. Mad rushing here. So he was raging, proper raging. So the next day, Andre's came in. a big green bag, Marks and Spencer's bag. 50 pairs. It was a £7.99 silk socks. 50 pair of them. Just flung them on the dressing floor. Went, socks for every fucker. Leave my socks.
We're like, here, we're stealing the socks. I love how Charlie Miller's always trying to do you in, man.
Nah, me and Charlie used to, we were backing each other up.
That's amazing.
Me and Charlie, man, it was me and him against McCoy and Durant all the time. But right for the start, I grew up a Rangers fan. Durant was up there for me and I loved him. And I'd obviously got to know him through different people a wee bit, but no the way. So at Rangers, my first day after I'd signed, the next day I was in training, and you had to wear a shirt and tie, and I had came from Morton, I didn't really wear a shirt and tie, only the club suit. And so I remember going out with my missus and thinking, I need to get some shirts, some ties. So I'd got a few hangers, and I got this kind of tweedy jacket, and I think about it, this kind of denim shirt, and a nice wee kind of golden thing, denim tie hang, right? So actually looking all right. So I've walked in, Durante was always there, his peg was under the Queen, he was in every morning, right? First in, sitting with his legs crossed, and I'm walking in with Jimmy Bell with my shirt and tie and that on. He went, for fuck's sake, I've signed Prince Charles. So, and I'm like, all right, and he kept going, what are you wearing? And he's there looking at my, right? So there's me, and every time one of the boys came in, Trevor Stephen, oh my God, he's like, hey, Trevor, met me Prince Charles. Honestly, I'd already, and it was brilliant. I always remember that my first day. I had a club motor from Morton still. It was a big Peugeot, burgundy Peugeot, right? It was every taxi in Glasgow was a Peugeot at the time, right? So I'd parked it, I'd run the reservation, parked it heading back towards Paisley, on the other side. And I remember coming out the Ibrox, and Charlie came out at the same time. And I'm kind of getting in my motor, and he's like, taxi, shout, right? So in the morning I came in, the boys are up with, you got a taxi car, you got a car there for your taxi. Brilliant. But Durante was, I remember he came up to me and he's like, I'm all having a bit of panic. He says, you're a good player, you'll do well here. He says, anything you want, come and see me. I'll look out.
Brilliant.
So there was always that joke a jag, but it was a joke. And then a wee hand on the shoulder. And Durante's, no, he's the best boy, you know.
Amazing. Right, on to Dundee United.
No, just Andy McLaren, he's Andy McLaren is one of the best guys that's ever lived. Yeah. A legend, isn't he?
I love Andy, and he's had such a tough life, and a lot of things to deal with and contend with, but we used to travel together. You know, it's so fond of him still now. I met him last week at Boydie's Test Golf Day thing, and we still play golf, Andy and myself and Charlie, occasionally. We don't do it as much as we probably would like to, but he's done brilliant for himself, and he was brilliant then. I remember I used to pick him up, used to meet him at the little chef at Westerwood, and he'd be like, take my motor today, and I'm like, right, but you get into his motor, he didn't have a sunroof, it was like an ashtray, it was like, you know what I mean? It was like a skip his motor, it's like a chimney, the thing with, and it was just smelling of fags, and then he'd be sitting with his coffee, a Twix, trying to drive, his fag and his phone, and I'm thinking, really? I'm like, just take my motor, do you know what I mean?
Was he wild? And in a dressing room?
Lively. I remember when we first signed, we were kind of struggling, and Andy was without a club. And I think Coyle had set it up, Ian McCall, Andy McLaren's going to come in. And we were sitting like third bottom of the table in my first season. And Andy, I swear, without a word, I just kicked the dressing room over. Went, panic's over, we'll be top six for Christmas. And we were. And we were.
Was he brilliant there, was he?
He was different class.
Panic's over, I was knocking that.
But technically, Andy, you know, I mean, he right foot, left foot, what a player he was. He quality. And I loved him, I still love him now. We're good pals, and he was great for us. And that dressing room, when I think back now for Ian McCall, it must have been tough. The opinions in that dressing room, it's like you get your age, or your age when you're the new, you think you know it all, and you think everything the manager's doing, what's he doing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We should be doing that, we should be doing that. It was me, Jim McIntyre, Alan Archibald, Barry Robson, Charlie Muller. We were all too much to say. I thought, looking back, but what a brilliant dressing room. Do you know what I mean? We go to the cup final that year, Alan Thompson beat 1-0. We go into Europe, and we finished, I think, fifth in the league. So it wasn't all bad, but we promised to deliver more than we did. It was disappointing that we'd never done more. We had a lot of good players in, but maybe not quite the right balance. Mm.
Did you stay up in Dundee?
No, I travelled every day, and I stayed up on a Friday.
Did you stay with Charlie?
No.
What's the one with the physio?
Oh, Barry Robson telling story, big Clarky, Jeff Clark. So, no, I used to stay up on a Friday night in the hotel with Andy and Grant Brebner and that. We used to just stay and try to do things right and get that rest and that, and then... No, but Barry Robson tells a story, because Barry used to go into Charlie's a lot in Broughty Ferry on a Sunday, and Charlie would be super Sunday, sitting there all day, a few cans and that. And there was one time he was supposed to get in for treatment, his ankle was blown up for the game on the Saturday, and I think we were playing the Wednesday night, maybe Aberdeen, maybe, I can't remember. And Barry says he goes round. He says he's one of the best ever. He says he's in. And there's Clarkie, the physio, doing massaging, game treatment for Charlie. And Charlie's lying my can and a fag watching the football. Saying, any chance, Clarkie? That's there. So that was
physio's get abused, didn't it?
Fucking bro. But because Clarkie was a neighbour, instead of Charlie going there, he came to Charlie. So, but then me and Barry went out to Bergen to see Charlie playing in Norway. And he was a god over there. You couldn't believe it. Out for a night out with him, and everybody singing his name everywhere you went. You know what I mean? And me and Barry went out there two or three nights with Charlie out there. It was brilliant. So
was Charlie brilliant as well, didn't
he? Yeah, he's a great player. Great player. That change of pace to get away from people, and left foot, right foot, that last pass, the calmness. Never rushed in the final third. Great finisher. Didn't like the running side of it. Probably didn't fulfill his full potential, but he was good value for every team he played in. Just a pity he never, because I think that generation, you know, that the talent he had, if he just maybe channeled it a wee bit more, but I don't think he's got any regrets, but he was the best boy. Charlie would give you his last penny, do you know what I mean? And he was, me and him were tight, we used to room together all the time, still good pals, you know.
And he had...
He's going by grandpa as well. Which
is he? Brilliant.
Brilliant. Aye.
And Dale had a open goal favourite, Charlie McGrew, as a young boy as well, didn't you? That's aye. Shit. He was wet behind the ears then, wasn't he?
Do you know what? I love Charlie now. When you see him, he's and what a sign he's been for Dundee United. I mean, he could argue have been up there for the running player of the year as well. He's that influence on that team. But no, he was young and he was talented when he came to us. But he used to travel up with us. So this was after Andy had left. Chizzy was the manager. I think Chizzy knew I got Big Charlie up with Gordon Chisholm, and it was me, Mark Kerr, Charlie, and
was Alan Archibald, he said.
I think maybe crack Alan Archibald or Big David McCracken, maybe. We were up, and it was Craig Brewster's at the time, so we were training at midnight. No, about 5 o'clock, second session. And so Charlie was like away, and as soon as he got in the motor, he was away. So we're driving down, we got back to the little chef at 5:30. And you could see him as we were going around. He's like, oh no, I think I've left my keys in the locker. No, my keys. And then he's like, he's turned around, his motor's still sitting. It was the winter and it was like freezing. His motor's defrosted, just sitting with the engine running for 7:30.
He'd left the keys.
Come along. That was a strange thing. I can't believe it was still there. Come along. But no, but he was a good player. He was always going to have a good career, Charlie.
Yeah. Just last wee bit, mate, this has been sensational. St. Johnston. So the bit where you come into being a manager. Played at St. Johnston at the time?
Yeah, so I'd been at Millwall, signed a 2-year deal. It was more relationship with Ray Wilkins at the time, and he's like, come down and...
Is he a hero at him, or was he?
Aye, so it was him and Nigel Spackman, Willie Donachie, and, you know, I'd an offer for St. Johnston before I got it, and I'd left Dundee United, and an offer for, potentially an offer for St. Mirren with Gus, and then Coyle's like, look, 2-year deal, come and help get us up, you'll be captain, blah, blah, blah. I said, right, okay, it's fine, so... that was all sorted, and Coyle phoned me on Monday night and he said, listen, St. Johnston only want a day, the only day 1-year deals for players over 30. And I went, oh, I've played 100 games, over 100 games for Dundee United in 3 years. It's a 2-year deal, Coyle. And he's like, ah, listen, you'll play every week, just come, you'll get your 2 years. I said, no, it's 2 years and we're not doing it. He's like, Dale, I promise you, you'll play every week. So I had a 2-year deal on offer for Millwall, and I thought, do you know what, it was 4 or 5 times the money I was getting offered to St. Johnston, but didn't really suit. But I ended up going to Millwall, probably for the wrong reasons when I look back now. And so then Ray Wilkins said, look, play the game Saturday, go back up Saturday night, train locally with your team, just come down the Wednesday night. It was a perfect contract, yeah. 35, and I was getting well paid for it. But it didn't sit well, mate, it didn't work. That's all fine, that stuff, if you're winning every week. But when you're the captain and there's a post-mortem for losing a game on a Monday and I'm cutting about in Scotland, so it felt as if I was... my wee boy Harry had just been born. I felt as always been half a husband, half a player, half a captain, half a dad. I just fell short, and I then ended up signing for St. Johnston in January. I signed for the 6 months. We nearly got up. We Gretna got up that year. We ended up 15 points in January behind, but took it to the last game, and we were actually promoted at one point until Gretna scored in injury time. And then Coyle left to go to Burnley in October, I think it was, and Sandy Stewart was assistant. Sandy was taking the Challenge Cup final, and he'd asked me to give him a wee home with the training. So we're driving back for Dens. We beat Dunfermline and to win the cup. And he says, Dale, I'm just got to tell the chairman I'm going with Coyle. I'm joining Burnley tomorrow. And I said, all right, okay. So the phone goes Monday morning. Stuart Duff, chief executive, says, hi, do you know Sandy's away? And I said, yep. He says, could you take a team, prepare the team for Saturday? I said, yep, fine. He says, we need to get a manager. I said, yep. And he says, why don't you apply for it? And I says, I hadn't thought about it, and I genuinely hadn't.
Well, you hadn't thought about management?
I thought about management. I knew I wanted to be a manager, but I hadn't thought about applying for that job, because I just thought that I was just playing. I was taking the reserve team at the time.
Right.
And see, when I think about it, I don't know why I didn't think about applying for it. I was just... And he said, Jeff wants to speak to you. Can you come up tonight at 6:30? And I said, that's fine. So I drove up. I thought it was just for a chat. 6 o'clock news, Tay News, to get to Broxton Roundabout. St. Johnston have called a press conference to announce their new manager tomorrow. And I'm going, I thought my missus, I was like, by the way, I think they've got a manager. She's, they said they're bringing one out. So it was in Jeff Brown's like, do you want to be the manager? And I said, aye. He went, he said, I think you'll be a great manager. He says, I'm offering you the job. And I was like, that was it. He says, I've watched you interact with the players. And I didn't know Jeff Brown. I'm one of the old school, like, players shouldn't really know all the directors, do you know what I mean? And and he says, I like the way you are, you've got contacts in the game and see the way you are with people. He says, I think you'll be great. And I says, so does my money go? Does it go a manager's contract? Is it my players? And he says, you'll be a player manager, we'll give you an increase. He says, just go and we'll announce it tomorrow. I said, right, fine, shoot hands. Real leap of faith for him, because I didn't have that much experience, but it felt good, felt right. And once I was in, I was in. Do you know what I mean? So I loved it.
What was your best times at St. Johnston? Best memories?
Winning the league that first year. So when we took over, we were bottom half. But that first, the next season, when I managed to make a lot of changes, we won the league. And that was, that was pretty special, to be honest. They boys were still wee guys, Irvin and
Piezo,
Martin Hardy, Kevin Rukovich, you know, Jody, Dubs, Alan Main, Stephen, all they boys, Liam Craig, Paul Sheeran, you know what I mean? We're still in touch, you know what I mean? It was great times at St Johnstone. And we went into Premier League, I think we finished eighth in the first season. Then when I left to go to Bristol City the following year, I think we were sitting third or fourth in the league. So it's a good story, St Johnstone, and hopefully they get out of it.
Yeah.
This season, because for the last 15 years, a lot of managers have done well and it's been a good story for them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Callum will get it sorted.
Do you see when they're just, we're neat?
That's not like that. I've been here all day.
In Bristol City, how do you look back at your time with them?
Do you know what? So I'd felt, I'd rejected a couple of jobs in England, and I felt when it came, there was a few people saying to me, be careful with Bristol City, they've had four managers in 3 years.
Mm.
They were bottom of the league, 10 points adrift, the second bottom when I took over. So, but it was still end October and I still thought it was enough games. And we took it on and we stayed up. And it was probably as good an achievement that I've ever had, you know, because...
It's a tough league, championship.
It is. And we did so well that second half of the season. I signed Chris Wood on loan, he was brilliant for me. Just through contacts at West Brom, and he was outstanding for me. And what we should have done in that summer was... I should have been kicking and screaming to get rid of more players. Every list I gave the board about players that needed to be moved on, they never really took me on. It was so hard to deal with, because Bristol City was the best club these boys were going to be at. They were all well paid and they weren't wanting to go anywhere. So we had four different manager signings in a dressing room, which is complicated. But when the board came, it says, look, we have to reduce financial fair play. We need to reduce the playing budget in half. So I had to go for like 15 million, just over 7 million. And we want to try, and if you need to get rid of the senior players and bring young ones in. So we Joe Bryan, who's just won promotion again with Fulham, made his debut at 16 for me and put Joe on the team. Bobby Reid, who's just won promotion. Yannick Bolasie, who was playing in the reserves, nowhere near it. We brought him in.
Did you bring Bolasie in?
Yannick in, he was brilliant for us. They ended up selling him to Palace when I thought we should have worked harder to keep him. With Albert Adoma, who was outstanding. I loved my time at Bristol City, and do you know what? I really loved the club. I was destined to be the guy that got it going.
Yeah.
But I probably put too much faith in the club to do what they needed me to do. They said, look, this club's flirted with relegation for too many years. If we go down with Derek McInnes, we come back with Derek McInnes. You help us sort out the financial mess, we'll come back up. We lost a home game just after New Year to Leicester. Leicester ended up going up. They were a brilliant team. I think we lost, it was either 4-1 or 4-9, and got the shout after it, going to part ways with this thing. I think we needed a change, and it was a shock. It shouldn't have been a shock, because we're still in the bottom two.
Yeah.
But after all the conversations I'd had, but you live and learn. And then a few weeks later, I get the Aberdeen job, so it's evident for a reason, you know. So it was. I look back with a bit of frustration. I probably trusted people a bit too much, but I still look back and think I could have done things better in terms of. When I was at my strongest point in Bristol City, I should have been far more demanding. And that's probably what, when I went into Aberdeen with 14 players out a contract, and I let go 13. The only boy I gave a contract was big Josh McGuinness, gave him a contract. And I think because I'd been maybe kind of fingers burnt at Bristol City, I just thought I need to get rid, make sure I put my own stamp on this club. And that's what I did. So if I hadn't had the experience of Bristol, I might not have been as forthright at Aberdeen.
Amazing.
Is England something you want to have a crack at again?
I think I would like to. I don't think it's not something that's... there's certain things I want to do. I want to manage Scotland, and there's certain clubs I would love to manage. But you don't always get what you want. But I feel as a better manager now than I am. I've still got the enthusiasm. I've still got the... still got loads to offer. But I've also had... loads that I've learned loads as well, you know. So I think management's still the same no matter what age you are, as long as you have that connection with your team and you make good signings and recruitment and you get good support and you've got, because we all work for clubs, but you work for people within the clubs, and if the people are right, it makes the job hell of a lot easier. And still loads to do, and I'm still young enough to do it.
Dale McInnes, outstanding.
Thank you, boys.
What a guy. Cheers, mate.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.